Senator Keating, will the Senate vote to abolish literacy tests in federal elections?
Has there been a change in the administration's policy on Berlin?
What are the prospects for the remainder of the administration's legislative program, Senator?
Capitol Cloakroom. From the nation's capital, CBS Radio brings you the 705th presentation of Capitol Cloakroom, a spontaneous and unrehearsed transcribed interview with an outstanding public figure. This week's guest is Senator Kenneth B. Keating, Republican of New York. He meets with CBS News correspondents George Herman, Nancy Henchman Dickerson, and Wells Church. First, we hear from Mr. Herman.
Senator Keating, welcome to Capitol Cloakroom, a program you've graced many times during your 6 terms in the House and this your first term in the Senate. A quick check of your official biography in the Congressional Directory shows you were born in Lehman, New York, apparently at no particular date. But although ageless, you were old enough to be an enlisted man in the First World War, a colonel in the Second, and a brigadier general at the moment, with a long roster of medals and decorations from the European and Asian theaters. Since you're a Phi Beta Kappa and a graduate of Harvard Law School, we're sure you escaped being a member of the Kennedy administration only through the accident of being a Republican, but more of that later. Senator, you're one of the top experts on constitutional law and amendments on the Hill. Do you think the Senate can and will and should pass the bill to abolish literacy tests in federal elections?
Well, George, that depends on whether the present debate can be terminated. An effort will be made next week to invoke what we call cloture to limit debate. Even after that, every senator has an hour to talk. That's 100 hours. The chances are very good of passing the literacy bill, and I hope with some strengthening amendments, if we don't surrender to the organized, disciplined, and militant minority that's trying to filibuster this measure to death, but the leadership of the Senate, and indeed, I think, the President, have to make it clear that they mean business, and they're just as determined to get this measure through as the opposition is to bury it in an avalanche of votes. The votes for cloture and for passage are available, but they have to be marshaled, and they won't be produced if we just go through the motions.
Of the two votes now, that's the most important one, isn't it?
That is the most important, and after the vote on cloture, I would guess, unless overpowering effort is put behind it, that the first vote on cloture would command a majority of the Senate, but would not command the 2/3, which unfortunately the Senate rules require. Then I think if we continue for another week or two, the chances are very good that 2/3 of the Senate will say we've had enough and we're ready to vote.
Do you think the President and his people here in the Senate are going to put the necessary force to marshal those votes?
Well, I'm not privy to the decisions of the President of the United States. And I really can't say, Nancy, whether they will or not. I certainly hope they will.
Senator, are you implying that so far there has not been strong enough leadership for this bill?
No. To date, I think everything has gone along well, and I'm waiting to see what happens next week and what happens particularly after this vote on cloture. Even though the vote should not be 50% of the members, I think we should continue this debate. There are a great many senators who have interest in other legislation, and this is tying up the Senate at the time, but it's tying it up in a fundamental issue that affects the rights of all Americans, and I think we should stick to it until we come to a conclusion one way or the other if it takes us till Christmas.
Senator, since you are a lawyer, and also since we are not, I wonder if you could tell us how you feel about the argument of some of the Southern senators that this is not a legal bill, that it cannot stand, that the Supreme Court might in time have to rule against it.
The principal argument which they make is that this bill is unconstitutional. They base that argument on the provision in the Constitution which says that the qualifications of voters shall be fixed by the states. There is also in the Constitution, and we're reading it in 1962, not in 1789, there is also an amendment to the Constitution which says that you cannot deprive a person of his right to vote, neither a state nor the federal government, because of race, or color or previous condition of servitude. That is just as much a part of the Constitution as the original enactment of our founding fathers. We're not sitting here now as founding fathers. We're interpreting the Constitution as it is today, and that's the way the Supreme Court would interpret it. The Attorney General and his predecessor, the Attorney General under the Eisenhower administration, have said that this bill would be constitutional. I share that view, and I believe that the Supreme Court would sustain it.
Then you disagree, I take it, with Senator Eastland of Mississippi.
I disagree with Senator Eastland on that point and a good many others.
Well, I was bringing you to the one that you might have something to say about. His accusation that the Supreme Court has handed down decisions apparently favorable to communist causes.
I think his speech this week on that subject is extremely unfortunate. There are many decisions of the Supreme Court with which I have disagreed. This week, the Judiciary Committee reported out a bill which I've always favored to change the effect of a Supreme Court decision. This Supreme Court decision had said that it was no crime under the Smith Act to organize a cell of the Communist Party. Under the wording of the Smith Act, the only crime was to have participated in the original organization of the Communist Party. I don't think that was the intent of Congress. I think the decision of the Supreme Court was wrong. And this week, the Judiciary Committee of the Senate has reported out a bill to correct that. Now, that's the way to go about correcting decisions which you do not agree with in the Supreme Court. I am opposed to character assassination, or opposed to charging that the motivations of the judges of the court who happen to render a decision with which I don't agree are wrong. I think it's not a service to a constitutional government. It's not a service to our national security to attack, as on personal basis, the decisions of the Supreme Court. There is no man sitting on the Supreme Court, in my judgment, who is a communist or a communist sympathizer. And I don't like to see a determination of decisions as this senator has entered them in the record as pro-communist or anti-communist. The decisions are made, and they may be right or they may be wrong, in my judgment, by the members of the Supreme Court on the basis of their legal judgment. And I stress there are many of them I disagree with, but I would never attack their character or motivation.
Senator, you talk about motivation, and Senator Eastland, do you think he was politically motivated in making this kind of a speech?
He's a colleague in the Senate, and we are very careful not to indulge in personalities, but your question causes me to say this. Those who favor strengthening the civil rights and the human rights of our citizens are constantly charged with acting out of political motives. I have been a supporter of civil rights and strengthening the human rights of our citizens ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper. And I don't enjoy being charged with simply political motivations, and I think the monkey is just as much on the back of those who oppose all civil rights legislation. They speak for the people of their community, no doubt, but sometimes someone is going to rise and say that regardless of the position of the people in my community, I'm ready to stand up and say that all Americans are the same, and they're born equal, they're equal in the eyes of God, whether they're black or white or any other color, if they're American citizens.
Senator, after that very clear statement of your feelings, let me go on to ask you about the case of Thurgood Marshall. Is the Judiciary Committee dragging its feet on his nomination to a judgeship?
Well, the hearings on Thurgood Marshall's nomination have been delayed the longest of any since I have been a member of the Judiciary Committee. He was named by recess appointment last October, and ever since the Congress reconvened in January, this nomination has been before us. We've had hearings on many, many others. We finally did get to a hearing the other day. The committee is composed of Senators Johnson of South Carolina, McClellan of Arkansas, and Huruska of Nebraska. The two Democratic members from South Carolina and Arkansas didn't show up for the hearing. It was conducted by Senator Huruska, a Republican. He raised no questions in the hearing, but he did say at the end of it that the chairman and other members wanted to ask some questions and it would have to be delayed. One of them was late getting here on the train and the other was engaged in the Appropriations Committee. Now, I am not prepared yet to say that there has been... I think there has been undue delay, but I'm not prepared to say there's been real foot dragging yet. But I do think that this matter should be brought to a conclusion. Judge Marshall is participating in a 9-man court where they have frequent 5-4 decisions. And if you're on the 4 side of a 5-4 decision, you're bound to, as a litigant, to have some doubt about the validity of a decision that's made with a judge kind of half sitting there. He's sitting, but he isn't a full judge until the Senate confirms him. And I think we should get on with this job and confirm him promptly. He's a distinguished lawyer and has had a fine record during the 6 months he's been sitting on the bench. There's no reason in the world for opposing him, except that there are those who are opposed to having any Negro sit on any court. And I think that that's a short-sighted viewpoint in these days in our country. And I shall press to have further hearings.
Senator Keating, if we could switch from civil rights to international affairs, I'd like to ask you about the administration's policy on Berlin. At present, Secretary of State Rusk is in Athens at the NATO meetings. He's conferring there also with German officials on the continuing East-West talks about a Berlin settlement. According to reports, Secretary Rusk is attempting to get approval from Dr. Schrader, the West German foreign minister, of the fact that East Germany must be a party in some form to any Berlin settlement. Now, if these widely disseminated reports are true, do you think this represents a change in our policy toward Berlin, and how do you feel about it?
It certainly does represent a change. Any East German participation in the control of our access rights to West Berlin would be a... renunciation of our previous position and would be, in my judgment, a disaster. It's hard enough to coordinate the actions just within the nations of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization without pulling in East Germany. I'm very concerned about the fact that we have been giving way in Berlin over a period of the last year or so. The concessions have been on pretty much minor points, but there have been concessions. Originally, there were many entry points that could be used. Today, there's only one principal entrance. Originally, West Berliners were permitted to travel freely in East Berlin. Now they're barred. Originally, American civilians could travel freely in East Berlin. Now they must show their identification cards. Originally, the Western air corridors were reserved for Western flights. Now they're threatened by Soviet military flights, many of which are unannounced. Now, all of these things have been done without serious protest, and I think the time has come to call a halt.
Are you going to do something about it, such as try to see President Kennedy about this?
I have talked about it on the Senate floor, and I... have been contacted by some administration officials who want to present their viewpoint to me, and which I'm very happy to hear. And I expect to meet with them tomorrow or next day. But I don't think that that's going to change my fundamental viewpoint very much.
What do you think about the fundamental concept of an international authority guaranteeing the access routes outside of the question of having East Germans on it?
Well, we haven't had very good experience with these international authorities. We had a dose of that in Laos and South Vietnam. They've failed there. The Polish representative on the International Control Commission has prevented any action. I don't see much to be gained by it, but I'm willing to be informed about the position which the administration takes in this regard.
How do you feel about a summit meeting, Senator Keating?
I see no value in a summit meeting whatever at this time. We had a summit meeting which was an abysmal failure. It would have been better if President Kennedy had never gone to it, and I see nothing to be gained whatever by any summit meeting at this time.
It's frequently said that the only purpose of this particular summit meeting was for the President and Mr. Khrushchev to get some better estimation of each other. Do you think that was a failure?
Well, you'd have to ask President Kennedy about that, whether he has any better idea about Mr. Khrushchev. Mr. Khrushchev, in my book, is just the same Khrushchev that always existed, and I don't know whether the President gained anything in that regard.
Senator Keating, at the outset of the program, I suggested we might like to talk a little bit about what the chances are for the Kennedy administration's legislative proposals. With this long debate going on at the moment, it would appear to a casual viewer that things are in trouble. What's the situation, really?
Well, not only a casual observer, but I would think anyone intimately associated with the entire program would realize that the administration program is in trouble. You could go right down through the list. The medical care for the aged is opposed by the Democratic chairman, both in the House and in the Senate, of the committees that deal with that matter. The tax bill passed the House, but as Senator Byrd, who the chairman of the committee in the Finance Committee in the Senate, has said, it doesn't seem to have the support of anyone. I don't know of anybody that's for the tax bill. If the House bill were before the Senate today, I would vote against it. It's a soak the poor bill. It's a it gives a little handout to business. It isn't going to help stimulate our economy or relieve unemployment in any way. I don't see any merit in the bill passed by the House. Now, that's not to say that the Finance Committee may not come up with something better, but certainly the tax program is in difficulty. The trade bill, I would expect there would be some legislation in the field of foreign trade. I think there should be. I think we must realize the new problems that are created by the European Common Market and face up to them. I would hope that the administration would not be adamant about all the provisions of that bill. I strongly feel that Congress, which is given the constitutional authority over trade matters, should have a voice, a larger voice than is envisioned in the bill itself in the formulation of trade policies. And while wide discretion should be given to the President to lower tariffs, I think that if he goes too far, some veto power in the Congress should exist. I have suggested a two-thirds veto, which would certainly be only be available and only possible to get it if there was felt by the Congress to be a real abuse by the President. I don't know what's going to happen. I suppose that we're likely to be here until after Labor Day, and then probably won't have our work finished, and we'll be called back after the elections in November for a further session. That would be my present prediction.
Excuse me, George.
I was just going to say, you've skipped one bill which is of more than passing interest to the three people sitting before you, and that is a proposal, not necessarily part of the administration's program, but a legislative proposal to license the broadcasting networks.
Oh, I didn't know you wanted them licensed.
I don't know that George Herman said he did.
Oh, well, that's not a part of the administration program so far as I know. If it's part of the program of the networks and the networks really feel that they should be licensed and could do a better job as licensed agencies, I would certainly regard that with serious consideration. But that's a matter that we'll have to have some hearings on in the Communications Committee on which I serve, and I just don't know enough about it. I'm opposed to censorship. I'm opposed to trying to tell the networks or any other media what they can write or what they can show on the screens and so on, although some, I must say in all candor, that some of the things that are shown on the screen these days, in my judgment, could be improved. But I want to say right here and now that any programs upon which I've seen Mr. Herman or Mrs. Dickerson or Mr. Church have been of the highest caliber.
Thank you, Senator. But speaking of programs, you've talked about Democratic leadership here on Capitol Hill. I'd like to talk about Republican leadership. That's Representative Charles Halleck in the House and Senator Dirksen here in the Senate. And they have what is popularly referred to as the Evan Charlie Show every week. Do you like and approve of that show? And do they speak for you as a Republican member here in
Congress?
Well,
I'm so busy with my work in the Senate that I have frankly never seen that show. It goes on in the daytime, and I guess it's rebroadcast sometimes in the evening, but I do so much work in my own office at night, and I'm so busy that I've never had an opportunity to watch the show. I think that I respect the leaders of my party in both branches. I think, however, that there are other points of view in the Republican Party which should be put before the American people. I don't think that Congressman Halleck and Senator Dirksen necessarily reflect the views of all Republicans. That's the reason that I have advocated the establishment by the national chairman of what I have called an all-Republican committee, which would bring before the public the fact that President Eisenhower, Vice President Nixon, President Hoover, Henry Cabot Lodge, and many people in other life, Governor Rockefeller, and Senator Goldwater and many others speak for a segment of the Republican Party. And I think that I'm gratified that Chairman Miller has indicated that he intends to move in that direction and to establish such a committee so that the American people will realize that the Republican Party is a national party in which many points of view, conservative and liberal, exist, and I think that's as it should be.
Who's going to be the Senate? Who's going to be? I'm still bleeding from the wounds you inflicted on me. Who's going to be the governor of New York next year?
Rockefeller.
A fellow named Rockefeller?
That's right. I'm confident that there's no one on the horizon who can beat him for the governorship.
Is he going to serve out his full term in the governorship or go on to other things?
That you'd have to ask him. I'm sure that at the moment every energy of his is bent toward his reelection as governor.
Well, at that point, we've just about run out of time, Senator Keating, so I'm going to say in a rather bloody but unbowed fashion, thank you very much for being with us today on Capitol Cloakroom.